Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your titles.
Diana Jean Shemo, and co-director of Double Exposure Investigative Film Festival and Symposium.
And Sky Sitney, co-director of Double Exposure.
And we're here talking because the festival is back October 13th through the 17th. What year are we in now?
This is our seventh year. We started in 2015, so this is our seventh season.
Wow, hard to believe. And we'll all remember that first year you screened Spotlight, and the rest is history. But cool. But this year, it's the seventh year, but this year is unlike any others. Actually, did you go virtual last year?
We did, okay. Indeed. So this is our second virtual year, or largely virtual, because we do have a couple of in-person experiences as well. But once again, the festival is taking place on the World Wide Web, so to speak.
And talk about how, you know, that is actually, I mean, while we all miss, we can't wait to get back to the days of actual film festivals and, you know, chatting with people, you know, on the way out of the theater and that kind of thing. Talk about the silver lining of how it's, you know, going virtual, especially after you've did basically a trial run of it last year. Now you're in year two, you know, how it's pretty much, you know, it's democratized it a little bit. You know, people can, maybe it's widened the amount of people that can come to this thing.
Yeah, we've seen actually, a surprising growth in the audience over the last, last year and this year as well. We're seeing a growth in the audience because the reach is much farther. So the experience itself is the symposium and the festival screenings. The screenings are available virtually, including this year we're doing opening and closing night, and those are in person as well. But we have seen a great increase in terms of our audience over the last 2 years now.
Right. So opening and closing is there's still an in-person component, but the rest, describe how the rest, you can pretty much, they're available like on demand throughout the entire festival, right? Like you don't have, there's not like an appointment time you have to tune in. They're up there for everybody, right?
That's right. So we're using a wonderful platform called Eventiv, which can be found through our website. And once the festival kicks off on Wednesday, October 13th, audiences can access the entirety of our film program. And included in the film program are pre-recorded Q&As with the film directors and in some cases subjects, where they can watch those as well following the screening. But it's essentially on demand. Once someone decides they want to watch a film and they begin to watch it, they have 48 hours to conclude that screening. And these films are available through the 13th and 17th to watch, you know, at one's leisure, at one's own schedule.
Right. And that website is dxfest.com.
Sounds great. All right. Without further ado, let's talk about the reason we're all here, which is the movies and the actual, you know, the symposium, the conversations. So you mentioned opening night is going to be in person. Where is it going to be held and what are we showing?
Yes, yeah, so the opening night film is United States versus Reality Winner, who is the whistleblower. She was 25 years old, NSA contractor, and she disclosed one document about Russian election interference and became the number one leak target of the Trump administration. She's actually going to be participating in the post-screening discussion remotely, and we believe this will be the first time that she's speaking publicly since she was arrested and then released. She was released recently on house arrest, but has been very, very quiet. And this will be her first chance to kind of speak a little bit about her experience. That will be taking place at Naval Heritage on Wednesday night.
Right. Wow. That's a really big get that she's going to be, remotely joining you. Cool. So that's the big opening night. Let's discuss the other bookend, and then we can kind of fill in some of the other highlights in between. So on the other bookend, the closing night, the other in-person event, is that also at Naval Heritage Center? And what do we got?
Our closing night film, Accepted, which plays on Saturday the 16th, starting at 7:30 p.m. at the Naval Heritage. And it's a really moving film about a number of high school seniors in a Louisiana charter school. It's called the T.M. Landry School, which is kind of known as an unconventional K-12 school that has a remarkable track record of sending nearly all of its recent graduates to elite universities, places like Stanford and Harvard and Princeton. And the students work tirelessly and they have an impassioned leader, but something does begin to register as suspicious with this incredible track record. And indeed, there are allegations that are proven true about ways in which the leader is changing records, et cetera. In fact, it comes through with a New York Times investigative piece that's embedded in the film as part of its storyline. And this is all taking place at the same time that Operation Varsity Blues happens, which offers a really interesting kind of parallel universe. But essentially the film follows these students in T.M. Landry's school over a number of years and both looks at their incredible dedication, but the ways in which they get entrapped in this broader kind of issue and how that all plays out. So we're very excited that the filmmakers, Dan Chen and his producer, Jesse Einstein, will be accompanied in the post-screening with a number of the key film subjects.
Very cool. All right. So that sounds like a great opening and closing night in person. Now, as we mentioned, there's a bunch of great stuff in between that is virtually available, basically on demand anytime you want. So obviously, we don't have time to talk everything. You can head over to dxfest.com to see the full lineup. But you want to talk about some of the highlights in there?
Sure. We have some amazing films this year. It's actually our biggest lineup yet. We have 30 feature and short films on the slate this year, including Rescue, which is a National Geographic film and is our centerpiece film. It's looking at the rescue of 12 boys from a soccer team in Thailand who got stuck in a flooded cave in northern Thailand, and the operation to rescue them. It's by Yi Chai Vasarali and Jimmy Chin.
And I'll just add to that, that these filmmakers won the Academy Award a couple of years ago for Free Solo. So they're kind of beloved and known for their incredible filmmaking, taking us, you know, in one case to the tops of the mountains and now into the inner sanctum, deep in a cave.
Absolutely.
Wow. All right. Any others you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, we do have one other incredible film, which is our spotlight film. So we're just really giving you the top tier.
Sure.
The films that are in some way just we've elevated. That film is called Flea. It's by Jonas Poer Rasmussen from Denmark. It tells the story of Amin Nawabi, who is a refugee from Afghanistan after the Soviet occupation. He's now living in Denmark, and he's telling the story of his family's escape from Afghanistan. And it's animated, but also spliced in with real footage of things that were happening at the time in Afghanistan, in the Soviet Union, in Europe. It's really an amazing film, very creative and revealing and touching. It's one that I would urge everybody to try to see.
Great. And I know that's sort of the spotlights and the ones you said you elevated. You feel free to talk about any others if you really want to. I mean, it's mm-hmm. whatever you would I'll highlight as many as you want.
Sure. Well, this is a film that I really think embodies sometimes the spirit of double exposure, which is to expose things, to bring out into the light places, institutions, issues that are often hidden. And one is called Courtroom 3H, which takes us inside a Tallahassee family court, which is a space, you know, always off screen, always invisible. And in this case, we are situated within the confines of a family courtroom that specializes in judicial cases involving minors. And we see the broad cross section, the kind of devastation of issues that bring people to these spaces. Sometimes actually, I shouldn't say it's entirely devastating. There's some hopeful moments such as, you know, exciting adoptions, but in general, you see, you know, all the tragedy. And it's just a very interesting look at how the intersection of how the judicial system weighs in on these most intimate cases, and quite fascinating and filmed in a really interesting way, really shedding light on that space.
Right. We also have Stanley Nelson's new film, Attica, which is using a lot of footage uncovered from the prison uprising of 1971. Wow. And that is just a really interesting revisiting of an event that a lot of people, I think, thought they knew in one framework. And then you see this film and you really, it recasts the way you think of this particular uprising, what was at stake and what a pivotal moment it became in hindsight. It's something that it's just a masterful film. So that's another one where I would just, you know, say, be sure to see it. And then Burning by Eva Orner is also fascinating. That looks at climate change in particular in Australia. And it's a story that we all think that we know in the sense of, gee, you know, forests are burning with climate change. But she's doing something very interesting there where she's kind of casting the fire itself almost as a character with its own nature, its appetites, reactions to what happens. So she covers the political side of this issue that we all know of, you know, governments that want to, you know, deniers versus is it man-made versus like all of these arguments we're all familiar with. That's covered in the movie. But that's not where the locus is. The locus is really on fire itself. What is its nature, and what does it mean for the rest of the planet that Australia is burning like this? So I think that's another film that I would say, you know, is on my list of must-sees.
And I'll just add one more here, which is The First Wave by Matthew Heineman, also an alum of the festival, and a wonderful
Oh, yeah, summer. I remember him. Wasn't he Cartel?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And he's, you know, definitely becoming more and more identified as a really interesting investigative filmmaker who's always going into difficult terrain. And his latest film, The First Wave, certainly stays with that. He has entered the ICU in New York City's first wave of COVID and has embedded himself with frontline workers, healthcare workers, in particular at the Long Island Jewish Medical Center in Queens over the first 4 months of COVID's wave. And you see from the front lines, the incredible work that's being done, the fear, the anxiety, the tensions. You know, you're just like going into the caves of Thailand or going into a family courtroom. Here we go into a space that has been really largely invisible to us, where we see all of the intricacies of these and the horror and fear and in some ways joy of these first 4 months of COVID when they hit in New York City. So it's a very poignant, beautiful, and intimate film.
Mm-hmm. And there are two films also that are about journalism itself, which is, you know, the sort of organizing thing of double exposure is, you know, what's happening to investigative journalism and what does it mean for the public? So we have two films that are not specifically about investigative journalism, but are about journalistic enterprises that are struggling against different kinds of odds. So Storm Lake takes place in the United States. It's about the Storm Lake Times, which is a newspaper in Iowa that manages on, it's basically a family operation. And on a good year, they maybe make $20,000. So it's clearly a labor of love that managed to win a Pulitzer Prize in 2017. So, you know, they're committed to excellence and to being there for the community. So this is kind of a film that looks at how does, you know, what does a newspaper mean in the life of a community, and what's at stake when we see, you know, a quarter of all newspapers have disappeared in the United States since 2004. The ones like the Storm Lake Times are in fact the most vulnerable. And what does that mean? So that's one film that's kind of worth taking note of if you're thinking about these things. And then we have Writing with Fire, which is a film that takes place in India. And it's the only news organization created and run by Dalit women, who are low caste women and entirely powerless, really, awfully vulnerable women who are, instead of just sort of saying, okay, that's my life, they're they're picking up their phones and their notebooks, and they've created a news organization that is asking questions that more established news organizations are too afraid or too corrupted to ask, or maybe too indifferent to ask. But they're asking questions and getting answers and putting politicians on the spot about situations that are unacceptable, and they're kind of making that news. It's really, that's an incredible film, and also inspiring, which is something we really value very much at Double Exposure, because a lot of the films are kind of exposing wrongdoing, and this one is exposing wrongdoing, but it's also showing incredible bravery. And so in some ways it's kind of like The Rescue. It's one that leaves you feeling good.
Great. And sort of just like piggybacking off of that, that's the perfect place to, the way we can close this thing out is just sort of, you know, remind us the whole, you know, point and the meaning behind the name Double Exposure too, and just the whole, I guess, more of like the mission statement of the festival itself.
Skye, do you want to do that?
Sure. So true to its name, Double Exposure is looking at the intersection between filmmaking and investigative journalism, and recognizing that there's this really poignant, exciting, creative space where filmmakers are increasingly taking on the work that has historically been contained in the realm of journalism, breaking stories, exposing corruption, bringing us into spaces that have otherwise been inaccessible or invisible to us, and often doing this, taking on the risks of many journalists, but without the infrastructure, the institutions to support them, or even the training. And similarly, many journalists are recognizing the power of visual storytelling to reach broader audiences, and that audiences themselves are turning more and more to the visual over print journalism, for better and for worse. So we want to celebrate this incredible new work, but also become a place where we can help these constituents seed new collaboration and share resources and best practices. So for our general audiences, we bring to them in a program that showcases the best of this new filmmaking. And in our concurrent symposium, which is really geared more towards the professionals themselves, we create a meeting ground that doesn't exist anywhere else, where filmmakers and journalists and the industry that supports them can come together to indeed share these resources, best practices, and make new connections.
I just wanted to add that part of the initial kind of impetus for this was, we are all kind of aware that, we are all kind of aware that investigative journalism is an engine of democracy, of an informed citizenry, and that it's, without it, you can't really have people holding government accountable. What we wanted to do through Double Exposure, what we do through Double Exposure, is we try to remind people that it is also an engine of culture, that so much of what we consume as audiences comes through investigative journalism, and that that can only happen with the support of the public, that it relies on laws, it relies on a business model, it relies on myriad things that need public support in order to get stronger and to stay protected. So I just wanted to make that point before we sign off.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. This was great.
Okay. Great.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye.